Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, everybody, here we go. We're talking about third base, a very, very deep position. Or is it? Question mark. Yeah, it is. Or is it? I'll answer that in a little bit with Scott White and Chris Towers. We do have some news that we must get to here on Friday, February 21st. So, Scott, hi.
Hi.
You love pitchers. They're dropping like flies. Luis Severino might start the year on the IL with right forearm discomfort, and Carlos Carrasco has leg discomfort. What's up?
Well, they're both going to be reexamined later today, so we'll probably have a clearer idea when that happens. The forearm tightness for Severino dates back to his last start last season.
And that's unbelievable.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm here.
But I mean, he's obviously had MRIs and stuff since then that haven't revealed anything, so I don't know. I don't know if it's a situation where he's just going to have to learn to deal with the discomfort or what, but I don't know. We don't really know much of anything at this point. It's worrisome though.
Okay. Well, I guess it doesn't really make sense to talk about it today since they're both going to be examined later today, but I think just kind of long term, or, you know, you've got to be a little worried about Luis Severino, right? He's not showing much durability lately.
Yeah, I mean, forearm pain
is connected to the elbow.
It's often a precursor for elbows, and it's possible he has such a small tear in his UCL that MRIs can't detect it, I guess. I don't know. Or maybe it's worse. I mean, maybe now the latest MRI will show something. Who knows? But yeah, it's not good, but it's not. There's just so little to go on right now.
Okay. We'll figure it out then, and I guess we'll wait on Carrasco too. That's pretty much the big news. Yoan Moncada and Tim Anderson. We've talked about Anderson. We'll talk about Moncada today. They're likely to bat atop the order for the White Sox. Could be a nice thing for them. Ian Happ is likely going to play center field for the Cubs this spring. Ian Happ, I don't want to just completely skip over him in our position previews, Chris. Is there some sleeper appeal for Happ?
Of course. He was really good at AAA last year, cut the strikeout rate, came back up towards the end of last season, and showed some signs of progress. You know, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game that was sort of unexpected, but at this point, you just kind of have to bake it into your expectations for him. But I did a draft last night with a bunch of industry people, and I took him. It was a roto draft. I took him with one of my six bench spots because why not? If he plays every day, there's 25 homer, 10 steal potential there.
Yeah, he had a near 900 OPS last year, Ian Happ, and he played 13 games at second base, so he lost the eligibility. You know, it did not carry over. He's only outfield eligible right now, but he played 7 games at first, 13 at second, 8 at third, 29 in the outfield. There's a chance he's going to have a lot of eligibility at some point. or maybe just outfield. We shall see. But Ian Happ, 264, 333, 564 slash line. And let's see where he's going really late, if I recall. 327th overall. Nobody wants Ian Happ. So.
No traction there. He cut down on his strikeout rate significantly in the little bit he played last year. And that was the main thing holding him back. Small sample, so can't definitively say he's whipped that problem, but it was encouraging.
And if you take AAA into account, it was 152 strikeouts in 157 games compared to like 167 and 142 the year before. So that's a pretty significant increase, especially because those 142 games were, a lot of them were as a part-time player. So, he was up around a 30% strikeout rate in 2018. It was more like 25% in 2019. 25% is playable.
That is Ian Happ. Miguel Sano has like a 35% strikeout rate. We're going to talk about him. He's a very fun player, huh? He hits the crap out of the ball, but he doesn't hit it all that often. But when he hits it, it goes very far. He was on pace for about 50 home runs in 155 games. So let's get into third base right now. Before we do that, our Facebook group, though, please join our Facebook group. Just search for Fantasy Baseball Today on Facebook. You will find it. Come join. We'll post some topics every day, and you can get some feedback from other people in the group. And our newsletters, if you want, just right into your inbox, podcast content, the latest news, just go to cbssports.com/newsletters. You can find the different ones that we have, and there is a Fantasy Baseball Today one, cbssports.com/newsletters. So third base is obviously super deep, but there, just be careful on draft day, because this is what third base looks like if you take the top 20 and you remove all of the players who are shortstop and second base eligible. It's you take out Bregman. It's Arenado, Jose Ramirez, Anthony Rendon, Rafael Devers. Wow. That's your top four. Chris Bryant, top five. But then you take out LeMahieu, Muncy, McNeil, Machado. If those guys are playing at second base, Machado's not second base eligible, but if those guys are playing at second base or short, you go from Chris.
You mentioned Bryant. Bryant's outfield also.
Okay. I wasn't doing outfield, but yeah.
Okay.
Sure. You take out Bryant. You take out those three guys. You go from Chris Bryant to Vladimir Guerrero, Eugenio Suarez, Yoan Moncada, Matt Chapman, Josh Donaldson. It's not bad.
It's still pretty good.
It's not. It's good. It's good. You should have a good one. But after Donaldson, though, it's Sano, Gurriel, Justin Turner. So it's actually Donaldson's 10. So I don't know, Scott, do you want to, is there a risk in waiting too long at third base?
No, not. it's the position where you can clearly wait the longest of any of them. And even beyond the proven options, which are far ranging. There are still some sleepers to like too. So no, it is the deepest position, and it may be the deepest position in 12 years of doing this that I've ever seen.
But that's because there's so much multi-position eligibility.
There right? is a lot of multi, but even so, like my top, I think it's my top 19 third basemen are in my top 150 overall players, which
does that, how far does that go in the rankings? Is that like Justin Turner?
Yeah.
Or is he higher than that?
I think he's 20th for you, if I recall.
He may be just outside.
Gurriel.
But still, it's Justin Turner, who was clearly top 10 last year and didn't do anything to really fall out of it.
Yeah.
Except just have another year where he missed some time. So that kind of speaks to it right there. It gets to be a real logistical issue. How are you going to get that many third basemen on 12 rosters, especially when you're talking about a head-to-head lineup, which doesn't have the extra corner infield spot? So yeah, no, this is not one where you really need to worry about getting left out.
Okay, they will come off the board fairly quickly, though. I think that's the point, because they're going to be playing other positions as well. So the third base. So
no, I mean Donaldson. I've seen Donaldson go like in round 12. I've seen Justin Turner go in like round 15.
Yeah, but do you want Turner to be your starting third baseman?
Yes, that's fine.
Well, is it? I mean, while he's healthy, it is. But he's also like 35. His plate discipline got worse last year. His ground ball to fly ball ratio got worse last year, and he never stays healthy. So
that's fine.
I mean, Donaldson's ADP is 95th. Yes, and I think in a shallower league, Scott, like where you only have one and you don't have corner infield, middle infield, it's probably gonna those guys are probably gonna last longer. But probably in a deeper league where there are more hitters, just be aware, by the 100th pick, there's 15 third basemen off the board, third base eligible players off the board by the 100th pick, according to Fantasy Pros. Just saying. But it's deep. I'm not disputing that.
There's still a lot of good ones after that.
Right, that's the thing. Is you can still get Mike Moustakas, Miguel Sano, Yuli Gurriel.
Do you want those? Because Moustakas is 104th.
Fine. Yeah.
All right. Sano's risky as hell. I mean, Gurriel is super risky. Okay. All right. So,
but the thing is, there are still sleepers beyond that. So you could still, if you end up with one of the riskier options like Sano or Turner, you can still secure a fallback option that has pretty good amount of upside. There's two in particular I like. My two favorite late-ish round targets among hitters both qualify at third base, and we haven't even mentioned them yet.
And they are J.D. Davis and Gio Urshela. Right?
Adam knows me.
But, yeah. There's guys even beyond that who are third base eligible who I look at and, it's not the worst outcome if you end up with them on your bench because they have potential. A guy like Nick Solak, who looks like he's going to play pretty much every day for the Rangers, he's got 25 homer.
He's DH only.
You're DH only, Scott.
Hunter Dozier was really good before his oblique injury. Scott Kingery showed some signs. Yeah.
Miguel Andujar.
Yeah, we'll see
he's
how much
DH only also.
You're DH only, Scott. I don't know why you don't understand this yet.
All right, so do you have an overall third base strategy then? Because this is like shortstop. You could definitely take one in the first round, the second round, or be comfortable in the mid rounds. Chris, I'll go to you first. You have a third base strategy?
No, I think shortstop and third base are the two where I just want to get the best players possible. And one of the things I run into with third base is sometimes I draft a shortstop to be my third baseman, and then I don't get as many third basemen as I want. And there have been times when I've gotten to the 12th, 13th round, and Justin Turner, everyone knows, is one of my favorite players, and I can't fit him in my lineup. And so that's one of the things that you run into at third. You're talking about, you might miss out if you wait at third base. I run into the exact opposite problems that sometimes this is true for both shortstop and third base, where I just can't fit a guy in my lineup.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing. We talked about Alex Bregman on the shortstop preview. How I think he's the sixth or seventh best hitter, depending on whether you're going to prioritize Trey Turner steals over him. So he's his own separate thing. If Nolan Arenado falls to round two, I might consider taking him. If Anthony Rendon falls to round three, I might consider taking him. Jose Ramirez being a great one really great steal source at the position, there might be a justification to take him in the middle of round two, but I'd rather not have to do any of that. I'd rather not be in the position where I'm forced to make that choice, because when I fill third base that early, I find that I'm frustrated I can't draft more third basemen later. So while at shortstop, there are a couple of points where I don't really want to let Marcus Semien slip by. I don't really want to let Corey Seager slip by. At third base, I just wait until the last of what I consider the viable starters is left. In most of the drafts I've done.
And where's that? Where's the last viable starter?
For me, it ends up being Miguel Sano oftentimes. Okay. I like the upside there. I think he could lead the majors in home runs this year. There is some risk, but I'm doing that partly knowing I'm probably going to get one of J.D. Davis and Gio Urshela, if not both, later. And so I'm willing to take on the risk. Yeah, and you could probably wait even later to take Justin Turner, but I don't know. I've never... By that point, I'm just looking for upside hitters, and usually it makes sense to go with the third baseman.
Yeah, but you could take... it's funny that you're calling Arenado a second round pick.
No, he's first round caliber. It's just he's one of the first round caliber bats that's easier to let slide because he plays third base and he doesn't give you steals.
Mm-hmm. So there's not much of a difference between him and Bregman in a roto league. In a points league, there's a big difference. Bregman's clearly better. In a roto league, I think you could argue that Arenado's better.
Yeah, I mean, last year, Bregman, Rendon, and Arenado basically had the same season, at least for as far as a roto league goes.
Yeah, and Arenado does that every year. I mean, his batting average was actually pretty high last year, but he's always right. Good there.
The biggest difference in roto between them is Bregman, you could move to shortstop if sure. You're in that position where you're like, I wish I could fit another third baseman in. Oh, here's how I can do it.
Right. Well, so the way I see it, and tell me how you feel about this. If you take an early first baseman or third baseman, rather, you take Bregman or let's say Arenado, since Bregman, you can't move to shortstop, or Jose Ramirez or Rendon or Devers. You have to take them within the first. Devers is like top 25 pick. They're first or second round players, right? You can still take three third basemen. You could take one of them, and then in like round seven, you can take, you know, Max Muncy or McNeil or whatever, or move them over, or Manny Machado or Mike Moustakas. And then you can take Miguel Sano or Justin Turner even later and make that player your utility. What you're probably not going to do is take Vlad in the fifth round. You're probably going to, or Suarez maybe, you're probably going to wait a little bit longer and get to like the, you know, Muncy, LeMahieu. Right, because he's only third base. So in other words, if you can take one of those elite third basemen early, and you could still end up with three third basemen on your team, but one of them is obviously going to have to play a different position.
Yeah, so I was in my third base strategies piece. Be sure to check those out, by the way. They're loaded with information. But I kind of just casually went through the exercise of figuring out how many third base eligible players you could fit in your lineup. You would probably have to resort to something else for your third outfielder. And obviously there isn't like a catcher third base eligible guy. But otherwise it would be very easy to fill out your entire lineup with players who have eligibility at third base. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah, it would not be a stretch to do that at all.
Okay, well that's good. It's good to know.
Yeah, so and so something else to keep in mind too, even if you are in a position where you kind of block up third base, Miguel Sano is going to gain first base eligibility probably within the first week of the season. That's a position he's expected to play most now with the signing of Josh Donaldson. So that helps. And also J.D. Davis, if you're like me and value him as a late-ish round target, he's outfield eligible. So there are two avenues that you could exploit there.
Which third baseman do you draft often, Chris?
It's probably been... Is it kind of boring to say Alex Bregman? I've drafted a ton of him because... At least in industry drafts, it's not really reflected in ADP, but I feel like in industry drafts, there have been instances of him falling, and I'm perfectly happy if he's there in the second round. Like, he went
amazing,
23rd
yeah.
overall in in this draft I did yesterday.
Roto.
23rd.
Wow. Roto, I'm assuming, your categories?
Roto, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Bryce Harper went ahead of him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
that is some...
Was it an OBP league or a batting average league?
No.
Wow.
I mean, even if it's an OBP league, Alex Bregman led the majors in walks last year.
Yeah, no, he's great. Harper has a little bit more
like steals derangement because Harper had, what, 15 steals last year? He's not a...
Yeah.
He's a pretty good contributor in the category, but that's something people overlook with Bregman. Oh, he didn't run much last year, but 2 years ago he had 10 steals. The year before that he had 17.
Yeah. He's fast
with Dusty
enough
Baker,
to steal.
Running the Astros now, like, he could surprise with like a 20 steal season. It's totally within the realm of possibility.
All right, Scott, who do you draft often at third base? By the way, Chris, that was pretty boring with Alex Bregman, but we'll let it
okay.
pass.
Okay. Also, Justin Turner.
Justin Turner.
He always picks like the best player at the position. Who do you end up drafting?
Well, yeah, I have like a whole roster of first rounders. So, how about you, Scott?
I end up drafting a lot of Miguel Sano, like I said. It seems like Eugenio Suarez is falling more than he should, given the injury news. He was like the first injury of camp. And it was a shoulder surgery, but it was like a cleanup procedure. And it sounds like he'll still be ready for opening day. So he's probably dropped about five. In the drafts I've done, it's not reflected in ADP yet, but I've seen him go like five or six rounds later than he was going before, and that seems excessive.
So his ADP now is round six, but like you said, it takes time for that to really adjust. When would you take Eugenio Suarez, who I'm pretty sure he led baseball in strikeouts, one more than Ronald Acuna, and he was second in baseball in home runs with 49?
He was my number seven player at the position. Now he's 12th for me. It is a loaded position, so it's easy to keep dropping him. Wow, he did lead the majors in strikeouts. 189, that's a low major league leading strikeout.
Well, it's only because Miguel Sano didn't play that much. And Aaron
Judge,
Joey
Gallo
too.
And Miguel Sano both got hurt. Aaron yeah. Judge got hurt. Giancarlo yeah. Stanton got hurt.
And it kind of... Go ahead.
Well, no, it was... So this is sort of a tangent, but it was kind of a weird year for like outlier production in like... stolen bases, saves, and strikeouts, I'm now realizing, because I thought about this yesterday. And like the guys who you would expect to lead in all of those, the leaders were really low relative to norms. And that's because a lot of those guys got hurt. I was just thinking about
I don't know about with stolen with the saves.
Well, Craig Kimbrell, Edwin Diaz, Kenley Jansen were all
not good.
Hurt or yeah, I mean
Chapman.
Okay, back to third base. Who is? that's cool. Miguel.
It's worth pointing out. This was the first time Eugenio Suarez had like strikeouts were in any way an issue for him, and I don't even think the rate was that bad.
And if that's the trade off, fine.
Yeah.
Like if he's going to become a better power hitter as a result of it, you take it, because it's not like he was helping you much in batting average before that anyway.
Yeah, he actually, Suarez, two good years in a row, he's been top 17 in OPS among all hitters. So he's a good hitter, but doesn't do a lot other than hit for power.
He gets on base in formats where that matters, but it's weird because he just had kind of the second level breakout where he turned out a 49 homer season, and he's going later than he was a year ago, certainly with this injury. I think that was true even before the injury, though.
I don't know. Round six? I think he was going that early last year?
No, he was probably more like round seven or eight.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. The fact that it's even close just shows you how much depth there is at this position.
Let's go to the third baseman you avoid in drafts. Chris?
I guess Manny Machado.
Why don't you say
the same answer as shortstop?
Jeez, you're killing it today.
I haven't drafted Chris Bryant.
There you go.
It's not necessarily that I'm avoiding him. I don't know if his production is actually worth the cost that you're paying. And it feels like a sort of name value cost that you're paying for him.
Mm-hmm. Can he be great? He's had an OPS over 900. Three of the last four seasons, I believe. But you know what's weird? He has the lowest RBI totals, like always, except for the year he hit 39 homers.
Mostly second last
know,
year, right? And this year, they're talking about batting him first.
He's going to bat leadoff, right? So he's going to hurt you in RBIs, and he's not that good with runners in scoring position for his career. His OPS is like 40 points lower than his career OPS. But that's a guy I wonder, Chris Bryant. I mean, I feel like he's played through some injuries, and he's still young, and he's the kind of guy who wouldn't shock us if he had a huge year. He's already done it. But 282, 31 homers, it's a really nice season with a great on-base percentage. He's number 11 third baseman. So, you know?
Yeah, he's a guy whose value improves in points leagues because of the on-base skills, but he doesn't, in terms of 5x5 categories, he's an okay source of batting average. He's going to score a bunch of runs, but he's not really a standout in the home run category like he was in his heyday when the home run threshold was a lot lower. You know, he's kind of stayed the same while the league around him has improved.
Who has more league-winning potential, Chris Bryant or Vladimir Guerrero?
Oof. I mean, it's a mist. I mean, it's the mystery box versus a boat thing.
No, it's like, not because what, no, because this boat.
But we know what. But
no,
we know
Chris
what Chris Bryant's upside is.
We don't know. I don't think we, unless you're calling 2016 or whatever when he had the 39 homers.
Right, his the year he won the MVP.
Yeah, top eight hitter in fantasy.
Right, he's really, he's, really good. Whereas
he's
Vladimir Guerrero
from that though.
Sure, but the skill set doesn't look that different. Whereas Vladimir Guerrero, we're still at the point where we're like, well, he could become prime Albert Pujols, and it's. We know Chris Bryant can't do that.
What's your answer? Right. Who do you think has more realistic league winning upside this year, Bryant or Vlad?
Bryant.
Bryant is the higher probability pick for sure. But I mean, if you're going,
Vladimir
for
Guerrero
upside,
could be anything.
It's Guerrero. It's
hey, Guerrero he has even more, be Chris Bryant.
Guerrero has more league losing potential too than.
Who would you draft?
Bryant.
Guerrero.
Oh, okay.
That's a thing where, like, I've made sure that I have at least one share of Vladimir Guerrero somewhere.
Yeah,
I haven't done that with Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I don't want, there's a little FOMO there too. Scott, who do you avoid in drafts?
Probably Guerrero, just because of his going rate. He's in my bust column because even to make just the modest standard of being the 53rd best player, he needs to show some skills improvement. He needs to hit the ball in the air more specifically. And certainly it's within the realm of possibility. We saw Juan Soto's fly ball rate go up dramatically from year one to year two. And no doubt the Blue Jays are well aware of what Guerrero needs to do to get better, but you never know if it's going to happen until you see it happen. So particularly given the quality of the third baseman going after Guerrero, and in some cases much well after him. The pick there doesn't make sense to me.
This is the great mystery of Vladimir Guerrero coming out of his rookie season. Is he was 47th percentile in hard hit percentage last season. And he also led the majors in batted balls over 115 miles an hour.
That's very interesting. So he didn't hit the ball that hard. He didn't hit the ball hard all that often.
He just
often,
wasn't consistent. He wasn't there yet.
But he crushed it at times.
And we all saw what he did in the Home Run Derby. I mean, he didn't technically win, but he won.
Yeah, he won our hearts. My guy that I'm avoiding is probably Devers. I just don't think that he should. I want to see one more season. Like, he was amazing. He was the number four hitter in Roto. But, you know, some high BABIP, home run to fly ball, right? Just things that feel like they're going to regress for Devers, and the counting stats were just outrageous. So I don't think he deserves to be an early round three or a late round two pick, and I'm probably not going to get him. I don't know. I just feel like this position's so deep that I don't feel like taking a risk on Devers. Like, Arenado's not a risk. You know, Ramirez is a risk, but at least he steals. So Devers, for me, is going to be the guy that I'm not taking. And then Ramirez is just maybe the most interesting player in fantasy this year, right?
Yeah, I'm convinced he's not really that much of a risk. It was such a weird detour his career took, because basically it was a full calendar year where he was like a 200 hitter. But there's been a lot of research is done about what went wrong and what went right again, and what Ramirez himself is saying, kind of the anecdotal backstory. Supports all the analysis. It's basically he started trying to beat the shift by hitting the ball the other way instead of sticking with his strengths of hitting pitches middle in and just yanking him out of the park. And then once he got back to that approach, he was back to being the guy who we were drafting third overall last year. And then when you factor in the steel scarcity and his ability to impact that category, I think middle of round two is actually good value for him. He could be that top five-ish type player again.
I'm pretty much all in on him. Like, I want Jose Ramirez, because I do think it's very realistic we're taking him with the top five pick next year, and he doesn't, you know, you're getting a discount. So this was my favorite Jose Ramirez stat, right? First 82 games, he's awful. He has a 629 OPS, but at least he's stealing. He stole 18 bases. Last 47 games, beginning on July 4th, so I think there's some patriotism here. He had an 1100 OPS, And he was on pace for 21 steals. The steals went down, obviously, but that's because he was hitting so many home runs. Then he gets hurt. And, well, within this stretch, he gets hurt late August. He misses about a month. He comes back from a broken hand. He homers twice in the first game back, including a grand slam. He has 7 RBIs, and he homers the next day. It was awesome the way he finished the season. He only played 3 games at the end of September, but he had 3 home runs in those games. Let's do this kind of like a rapid fire. Which elite third baseman is most likely to be a bust? Out of Bregman, Arenado, Ramirez, Devers, and Rendon, those top 5 most likely to be a bust.
It's Devers. It's the guy who's only done it once.
Yeah.
Okay. How early is too early for Rendon in a roto league? The answer was like not at all early. The answer was probably like first last year because he was so good, but typically he's not that good. In a points league, however, he's tremendous. How early is too early for Rendon in a categories or a roto league?
If you took him 15th overall, you're probably reaching.
Yeah.
I certainly ADP has shown that. In my initial roto rankings, which I made without consulting anything else, just totally me sitting down on my own and ranking these players, he was in my first round. But since then, I've come to recognize not just the scarcity of high-end pitchers and base dealers, but how aggressively everyone else is also pursuing them, and that's forced me to move him down. So I don't think back of the half of the first round is necessarily too early, but it's earlier than you need to take him, obviously. Like, just if you have one of those late first round picks, just wait and take him with your second pick if you want him that badly.
Yeah, his last 3 years, the 162 game average is a .310 average, 32 homers, 121 RBI, 109 runs, and 6 steals.
But he's going to a much worse park.
He is going to a much worse park, but it's a better lineup spot. He's hitting either in front of or behind.
That's
best
one guy.
Player in a generation.
That's one guy. And there's Ohtani.
And he's
too.
Hitting behind Shohei Ohtani, yeah. Or in front of, like,
maybe better. But like they had a pretty good lineup last year. The
and
Nationals.
It's an American League team, so they're gonna have the DH, so the lineup's gonna turn over more, especially at the top. It's a better I think at worst it's a neutral context.
Okay. I want to correct something I said about Devers. I mentioned his home run and fly ball rate. That was not anything that's going to regress. His BABIP was sort of high, but it's really the counting stats and just the unprovenness. And that I think seems like we're on the same page. Which out of nowhere third baseman is most likely to repeat in 2020? JD Davis, Tommy Edman, Gio Urshela, Brian Anderson, Scott Kingery, Hunter Dozier. Who's most likely to repeat that success in 2020, Scott?
Okay, so you had a specific list of players?
You can add anyone. My list was JD Davis, which is going to be your answer, Edmund, Urshela, Brian Anderson, Kingery, and Hunter Dozier.
Yours is more late round guys.
Yeah.
It would have been JD Davis. Like, if we're just talking about repeat in terms of playing time, too, then yes, I feel very confident saying JD Davis, but that obviously JD Davis was kind of a borderline option in mixed leagues, particularly shallow in mixed leagues, because he wasn't playing every day. And that still seems like it's a concern given the positive reports of Yoenis Cespedes early in camp. So I'm beginning to have, although I still think JD Davis upside makes him well worth the drafting at the going rate, I'm beginning to have some concerns that the playing time will be a non-issue. The one I'm going to go with here is Gio Urshela in terms of being most deserving of the ADP, because like it doesn't even sound like the Yankees are giving half a thought to playing Andujar at third base. It's first base. It's maybe we'll try him in outfield, some DH. Urshela seems to have that job locked up. And considering that, it's amazing to me how low he's going, which is much lower than Davis even.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the biggest one-year outliers, even in a year with a lot of one-year outliers. Like, this was a guy who, looked like he was swinging a wet newspaper before last season. Mm-hmm. Like, he was not a major league caliber hitter.
He basically wasn't using his lower body in his swing at all prior to last year. And then last year, made that simple step of using his whole body when he swings. And, I mean, he just hit the ball so much harder. And he's always had good contact rate. He profiles. He has a very, very safe profile for batting average. And batting behind all those high OBP guys, his RBI total is going to be...
Yeah.
Okay, it's Gio Urshela we're talking about. Chris, why don't we get to your answer? Who's the out-of-nowhere third baseman most likely to repeat in 2020?
Not on your list, keeping with the theme of me just not playing by the established rules, Tommy Edman.
He is on my list.
Well, I didn't see him.
Well, he's there. Okay. Tommy Edman. Yeah, go on.
Oh, I think the skill set looks pretty safe. He was doing it in AAA. That's one difference between Urshela and Edman. Was Edman was a big time breakout, but like Urshela was a 705 OPS guy in the minors too. Edman was at least hitting before getting called up. The Cardinals, for whatever reason, it's not the strongest bit of analysis possible, but the Cardinals do seem to have a knack for developing late career breakouts like this. And the biggest thing for me is just stolen bases are so rare, as we talked about ad nauseum, that like that seems like a pretty stable skill set for him.
I don't love that Edman was awful for his first 45 games and then amazing for his last 47 games. I don't know if that means anything, but
I was at least consistent. I like Edman a lot, especially since he's second base eligible, steals like Chris is saying. I mean, if you don't get them early, he's a great source of them in the middle rounds. But I do have more questions about, personally, I have a little more skepticism about his bat than I do Urshela's or Davis's.
All right, here we go. Let's do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Let me ask you auction questions first. $260 budget. How much for Nolan Arenado?
I have him going, and I can tell you the exact number. Or I can. I thought I had opened that up. This is very good. This is a very good discussion we're having.
35 to 40?
Yeah. 38.
30, that's what I was going to say.
Right between 35 and 40.
37 and a half. How much for Vladimir Guerrero?
He...
14
is 18.
Oh, 18. Someone's going to fall in love with him. He's not going to go. Like, he's just going to take one guy. He's going to go for the 20s, I bet.
He's my number 11 third baseman. I'm sure he's going. He's actually going earlier than that.
$260 budget. How much for Josh Donaldson?
He is $9 for me.
Who do you like better, Josh Donaldson or Miguel Sano?
Donaldson. But they're right next to each other.
Well, across the field.
Right.
There's like three guys between. Most of the time.
Wow, what an infield. Okay.
I don't know about the lineup. They might be right next to each other.
Blank is my favorite sleeper third baseman, Scott White. Fill in the blank.
Gio Urshela. I pretty much made the case already.
Okay. Chris, who's your favorite sleeper?
How about Travis Shaw? Yeah.
How about him?
He was a disaster last year. Just from the get-go, tried to tweak his swing in the offseason, didn't like how it felt, and I believe the story was he tried to rework his swing in the offseason, got to spring training, hated how that went, and tried to go back to his old swing, and just never felt right. But this was a guy who I believe was a 30-homer guy 2 years in a row. Hit 63 homers between 2017 and 2018. I would anticipate he's going to play pretty much every day in Toronto, even with all the young guys that they have. And last I checked, I don't know where his ADP is now, but it's 399 right now. So basically, like, null. This value does not exist.
I don't know that Travis Shaw can hit lefties anymore, but at his ADP, Travis Shaw doesn't have to hit lefties, but this is what he did against lefties last year. Not to say he was good against righties, but he batted 102 with one extra base hit in 49 at-bats. He slugged 122 against lefties. Interesting.
The case for Travis Shaw is just to throw out last year.
Yes.
Like it was just,
yes.
It was
but
just
2 years ago,
season.
He struggled against lefties too. But that's just a playing time thing. But, you know, could he sit? It doesn't matter. I think the ADP is so enticing.
if nothing else, it's encouraging that the Blue Jays were willing to offer him a full-time job.
Yeah.
And obviously they're not really expecting to contend this year, and they're probably just thinking it's a low risk move, but still, like, Scooter Jeanette hasn't gotten that flyer from any other team. You know, they're a lot of times when a guy just drops off a cliff like that, they can't find work next year, and Travis Shaw did. So that says something in and of itself.
Does anybody want Matt Carpenter?
No.
Yeah, I think we're probably writing him off a bit too aggressively. He was one of the five best hitters in baseball 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. In that year, it was about half the season. He was just unbelievable. The other half, he was terrible. It was like quarter of a season, terrible, then a great half, then a bad quarter of a season. But end of the year numbers was an elite player, basically. And last year, so bad. Another guy who's starting to really struggle against lefties for Carpenter. But who would you... They're both sitting there at the end of the draft. Carpenter or Travis Shaw?
Carpenter.
Shaw for Scott, Carpenter for Chris. All right, then. Who's your favorite breakout? Scott.
J.D. Davis. I will just mention again that while he was a 300 hitter with a near 900 OPS last year, he actually underperformed his expected stats. That's how good the quality of contact was. You know, a lot of times fluky things can happen in part-time roles, but even when it was August, I think, where J.D. Davis got a chance to play every single day because of injuries, and it was a huge month for him. He hit over 300 with like 9 home runs. Lefties, righties, the split was basically even. Like, any situation this guy was thrown in, he hit last year. So it's just a matter of what kind of gap there will be defensively between him and Yoenis Cespedes in left field. Cespedes coming off 3 leg surgeries. You know, maybe he doesn't have that much of a leg up there on Davis, actually. But even if Cespedes ends up getting the majority of time in left field, Davis is they're giving him, he's going to spend half his spring at third base, and he could end up playing a lot bouncing between those two positions with Jeff McNeil moving over to second base or whatever else.
Chris, favorite breakout?
Miguel Sano. You could argue the breakout already happened last year, but there's a decent chance that we're talking about him as the premier power hitter in baseball this time next season, and he's going to go off the board 4 rounds later than Joey Gallo, and I'm not sure there's a difference in their skill set. Joey Gallo seems a little bit safer because of all the injuries Miguel Sano's dealt with, although Joey Gallo has had trouble staying healthy in his own right. 2 of the last 3 seasons, Miguel Sano's been on a 40-plus homer pace. Last season, it was a 50-plus homer pace. I think a 50-homer season is well within the realm of possibility here.
Sano has never played more than 116 games. He got in better shape, but then he had a weird heel injury that required surgery, so his season didn't start, you know, until a little bit later, and he had a 923 OPS, but his 155 game pace was 50 homers, 247 batting average, 117 runs, 117 RBIs, 112 runs, but 235 strikeouts. That was his 155.
He's gonna strike out a lot.
Yeah,
but he's also like a career 360 BABIP guy, I believe. And so that helps make up for it, as does the fact that he just hits a bunch of bombs.
Yeah, he sure does. All right, Miguel Sano, who's the biggest bust at the position, Chris?
When I did my third base preview, I put Vladimir Guerrero, and this is kind of you're seeing the duality of how I view Vladimir Guerrero. I think the most likely outcome is he is a pretty sizable disappointment at his 53rd overall ADP. But I also will make sure I have him in at least one league, just because there's that tail end of his potential outcomes is really, really big.
Okay. So for you, Scott, who's your biggest bust?
I was going to say Guerrero too. I'll just add one detail to show you how far behind the rest of the third base pack he was last year. I'll pull that up in just a second, but You know, Manny Machado deserves a mention here, too. We talked about him a lot in the shortstop preview. None of us think he's really the sort of guy who could live up to that, the range where he goes either, which is about top 50, actually one spot ahead of Vladimir Guerrero. I think Josh Donaldson has a lot of bust risk. The position is so deep that it doesn't seem like many people are reaching for him. But, you know, he was, I think, the seventh best third baseman in head-to-head points per game last year. And just given his injury history and the fact he's like, he's 34. Yeah. Like, he's not, this is not the stretch of his career where you should expect him to stay healthy. I think the risk for him is just as high for Justin Turner, even though it's not reflected in ADP. So yeah, the stat I wanted to give on Vladimir Guerrero, he averaged 2.63 head-to-head points per game last year. And that's compared to like 3.35 for Chris Bryant. Donaldson was 3.31. Even Miguel Sano, who goes much later, and we're talking about him having breakout potential, he was 3.35. So yeah, like all those third basemen were in the 3.3 range, and Vladimir Guerrero was down at 2.6.
It's
basically
throwing out what he did last year entirely. That's the you're drafting him because he had a 1050 OPS between AA and AAA.
He wasn't even that bad last year as a how old was he? 20 years old? 21 year old?
20 year old, yeah.
20 year old rookie. Right. I mean, 272.
He hasn't turned 21 yet.
Yeah.
But the skill indicators back up what he did, right?
He wasn't unlucky.
He wasn't bad for a 20-year-old rookie. For a major league third baseman, he was.
It hinges on skills improvement, of course. I was saying.
But he has the skills.
It's betting on pedigree. It's betting that the guy who hit, lest we forget, 381 in 2018, mostly in Double A and Triple A, all in Double A and Triple A.
I want to throw out another name as a possible bust. Matt Chapman had a terrible September, and I was just reading on our website, if you go to player page, you get these updates. Martin Gallegos of MLB.com said that Chapman is working on his mechanics so he can be better against high fastballs and off-speed pitches. And in September, I know it's only 1 month, but I don't have the numbers in front of me. Oh, he batted 178. He did hit 6 home runs. But he struck out 31 times. Last 57 games total, he had a 734 OPS. He batted 193. But within that, he had a very good August and a bad September. So I don't know what to make of it. But the fact that he's changing his mechanics, Mac Chapman, to catch up to high fastballs and adjust to off-speed pitches, it makes me wonder if the book is out or something like that, if people pick something up on him. And I'm not sure that he's so much better than the guys who are going after him, like Donaldson and Sano and, you know, the depth of the position and Moustakas. So I probably don't
overall,
see myself
the overall production was very similar for all those guys. I was saying they were 3.3. Chapman was 3.2 last year. So he has the sort of batted ball profile that lends itself to a low BABIP, and so he may not be a great source of batting average because of that. But I don't think anyone's expecting Josh Donaldson to carry them in batting average, certainly not Miguel Sano. It just becomes a matter of weighing risk and reward at that point, and Chapman is the least risky of them.
I don't know if he's really changing his mechanics after a horrible September. After batting 193 in his last 57 games.
Maybe if he has the sort of spring Travis Shaw did last year, then we could start to wonder.
But if Eugenio Suarez is now dropping behind Matt Chapman, who would you take?
I have Suarez ahead of Chapman.
Yeah. All right. I feel like that might happen with the shoulder injury, but Scott mentioned it's probably not that big of a deal. So we go to average draft position. We have not talked about Yoan Moncada, so we'll definitely get to him. Bregman's 11th, Arenado's 11th, Rendon's 19th, Jose Ramirez is 20th. Points league, Rendon, Roto league, Ramirez?
Yes.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, Ramirez he hardly strikes out, so it's not like he loses value in a points league.
Right. Chris, then Devers 23rd overall, and then a pretty big gap to Chris Bryant, at the end of round four, beginning of round five. Manny Machado in round five, we've already talked about him as being extremely overvalued. Vladimir Guerrero in round five. If you've heard our second base preview, you've heard all about DJ LeMahieu. But Eugenio Suarez is there in round six. I think we covered him. And he's probably lower than that now. Yoan Moncada, round six. So he's in between Vlad, LeMahieu, Muncie, Chapman. Scott says, ugh, on Yoan Moncada.
I just don't know why these people, like, this isn't the year to pay up to, like, to gamble on upside to this extreme.
It's always the year to gamble on upside.
No,
upside
not,
wins.
Not among hitters. Like when Josh, given how late you can get some studly third baseman, I just don't.
But those guys aren't going to. Like, I think you're thinking too much in a points league context. And like,
oh, this
Josh
is terrible
Donaldson
value in
has,
points league.
Josh Donaldson has no chance of being a five category contributor. He's
yeah,
probably
I know,
a three category
contributor.
Moncada
has
at
a
best.
Minimal chance of being one.
Well,
so like
he
when you're
literally
paying,
just
when that
well, no,
big
hold,
of a difference in cost.
Hold on, he literally was last year.
I know,
it was
but
like
not
a five
way,
category stud last
first
year.
First of all, he had 25 home runs, so he wasn't
in
a stud in that game.
He had 10 steals. He that wasn't a stud.
Yeah, he wasn't a stud in
steals. He was a five like there were not that many players who helped you as much as he did in five different categories.
He was a contributor
was,
in all five.
He was a less believable Ozzy Albies.
I mean, like, you're acting like his expect like you're all about the expected BABIP or expected batting average and expected stats. His expect XBA was 291.
I know.
His
which
average
is a lot lower than he actually hits.
Right, but if he hits 291, he's going to be a stud. He's going to be a third round pick next year.
No way.
Yes, he is. If he hits 291 with 30 homers and 10 steals, he's going to be a third round pick.
What?
Yes!
Well, Springer isn't even a third-round pick.
Because he doesn't steal bases.
We're not talking about a lot of steals here.
30 homers is not...
Maybe well, double digits.
30 homers is not that much. What did we say? There were almost 60 players who hit 30 homers last year or something?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills I feel like
you are, too. You're a little crazy like, right now.
who would hit 291 with 30 homers and 10 to 15 steals?
Oh, you're upping the home run total now.
Well, he hit 20. He hit 25 in 132 games. You're acting like he played 162 games and
okay,
hit 25.
But 132 isn't. I mean, you should expect a DL stint for everybody.
You know what, Chris? You know what it is? It's a little bit better than Javier Baez. He hit 281 with 29 homers and 11 steals last year. He missed some time. He played 138 games, which is very similar to what Moncada did.
And Javier Baez is a fourth-round pick?
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like you guys want him there.
What are we doing?
No, I...
Well, I don't... We just talked about how I don't think Baez is worth it.
Right, but he's going 40th overall.
And
that is his ADP.
Moncada is 68. That's very high too.
Right, but
conversation.
The point was if he hits 290 with 30 homers and 10 to 15 steals, he's a third round pick. That's just true.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I feel like that's maybe late third. Get up
George
to 20
Springer
steals,
was
you're talking.
Much better than that last year. Much, much better. And he is going 38th, so outside the third round. Charlie Blackmon, 39th, outside the third round.
Yeah.
Ketel Marte was a first rounder basically last year, and he's going 44th.
Well, okay, first thing on Moncada, even though his strikeout rate went down, he's still a bad plate discipline guy. So sixth round in a points league would be a terrible idea.
Right. I'm not arguing
I know,
that.
I'm just
strictly for road.
I'm just saying. Just putting
like,
that
he's
out
an
there.
He's an elite athlete. He's an elite batted ball guy who improved across the board last year in ways that are not necessarily sustainable to what he specifically did with a 315 average. But like his XBA was in the top 10% of the league. And you're talking about him like he's a total scrub.
No, I think he'll be a pretty good source of batting average.
He did not.
I think that's the area where he'll probably stand out most. And of course, that's contingent on him continuing to keep the strikeouts as low as they were last year.
So, Scott, I mean, the interesting thing here with Moncada is that he is going in a range of players, other than LeMahieu, of like probably low batting average, but more power, right? Suarez, Muncy, Chapman, Donaldson. And Moncada's earlier than most of them, but any draft he could be just in that mix. So
yeah,
it really
I mean,
is due by the batting
power
average.
Hitter, if he improves as a power hitter, then he'll overtake those guys. But a lot of them have a big power advantage on him right now.
Yeah, a very big one. And with that might be more runs than RBIs, although he's going to bat first or second in the White Sox order. So, Chris, do you think that's okay value for Moncada in round six?
Yeah, he's on my breakout list.
All right.
I think there's room for him to even improve. He's still very young. He is one of the best athletes in baseball who started to look like a baseball player last year for the first time. Took big steps against left-handed pitching, which had always been an issue for him, and was more aggressive. He's a guy who needs to swing more because good things happen when he hits the ball.
And his
good
manager
things happen when he swings. The issue for him before last year was his approach wasn't great. He was too passive.
Yeah, and his manager,
I guess without getting into the specifics of Moncada, I don't see how in a year when a George Springer is getting pushed to round four, a Charlie Blackmon is getting pushed to round four, MVP candidates last year, LeMahieu and Semien, are going in round like 6 and 8.
TJ LeMahieu, fake MVP.
And there are a lot of like unquestionable, I guess. Maybe that's not the right word to choose, but there are a lot of players who quite believably performed at a stud level last year going into the middle rounds because the hitting pool is that deep. I don't know why you would choose to gamble on the hope of somebody maybe joining them in elite production in round six, five or six.
But I don't really think that. First of all, Moncada's going after all those guys. So who are the guys that he's going?
Right, he's going with
Goldschmidt, Bichette, Gary
he's
Sanchez.
He's going behind LeMahieu, who was just
three
as much
picks.
Of an outlier last year for his career as Moncada was.
But he was also much better last year than Moncada.
Moncada was pretty good, though. I mean, I feel like
yeah,
you're selling
Moncada
him short.
Was
and
awesome.
I don't really understand
on
the George Springer
basis, he was the
comparison.
On a per-game basis, he was the number 36 hitter in Roto last season.
According to your formula, which you admitted overestimated the value of steals.
I don't think it overestimated the value of steals. It's based on how many steals happened last year and
right,
how valuable
we move
steals
on.
Were in a league.
Still,
I mean, okay, but look at Moncada had 83 runs and 79 RBI and LeMahieu was over 100 in both.
But
LeMahieu
played more games and he was on a much better team.
But
he was on a much better team. And you have to wonder if the counting stats will go up for Moncada with the investments that the White Sox have made. You hope so.
It should be a much better lineup.
Should be. Okay, sorry. Let's keep going. We're in like the tier of lost my place in the average draft position. Okay,
Control F Muncy. He's next.
Muncy's in round 7. Matt Chapman's in round 8. Donaldson round 8. McNeil round 8 or 9. Moustakas round 9. Escobar round 10. No, I don't know what to say here.
Moustakas has become like the third baseman you settle for. And I think Escobar's probably there too.
Why is Escobar?
They'll probably
them?
Both be drafted to play second. Is like this is the range of
sure
second baseman who are posing as third. Fantasy second baseman. They're, in real life, they're probably third baseman posing as second baseman. But you know, they're going to get drafted to play second.
All right, here are some names. A few that we haven't mentioned: Miguel Sano, round 11; Yuli Gurriel, round 12; and Tommy Edman, round 12. Boy, that is high. Justin Turner, round 13. So what do you think about that group of Sano, Gurriel, Edman, Turner?
I've seen some people in the fantasy industry talk about Tommy Edman like a top 50 player.
Man,
there are people who are really, really high on him. He won't get drafted there ever, but that there are people who really, really believe in the skill set.
Do you?
He's one of my favorite mid-round steal sources, as we talked about in the second base preview. So I'm fine with him as a 12th rounder. I might even reach for him as early as the 10th, depending on what my steal situation is looking like at the time. Yuli Gurriel is the one I'm least likely to draft at his going rate. He's also one who seems to fall a lot because I think a lot of people who are in the fantasy industry, the kind of people I draft with the most, are skeptical of what he did. And he's on my bus list. I mean, it was basically just July and August was he did things that he's never done before, and then was fell back off in September. And a guy in his mid-30s, it's just difficult to trust that.
That's fine. I think I got him in the 16th round yesterday, which is fine.
Right. When he goes that late, it's like, what do you have to lose?
Yeah. You're going to get batting average from Gurriel, so at least you got that.
Yeah, and he was my starting third baseman in that.
And the runs and RBI should be high in the lineup he's in. Yeah.
Hunter Dozier will come off the board after that, and like I said, first 52 games before his oblique strain, he was amazing. He had 987 OPS. Batted 314 with 11 homers, 12 doubles in 52 games. Just was not the same player after coming off the IL, but he had an 804 OPS, so it's not like he was terrible. Hunter Dozier, was he? Yeah, he's right after Justin Turner. He's in round 15. Turner's in round 13. Then it's Dozier, Scott Kingery, JD Davis, Ryan McMahon. So, what do you like? Can you buy the oblique excuse for Dozier? Could this be a really good hitter that just got injured?
Round 15 feels a little rich to find out, but yeah, I think it's possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about Kingery?
Yeah. Kingery is I think being undervalued as aggressively as everybody is pursuing steals, and you just project out Kingery's numbers from last year and yeah, a guy was playing like three quarters of the time, and it comes out to about a 2020 season. So
it's a third round pick for Chris.
He's in a position to play every day this year. They haven't totally settled on what it's going to be, but it sounds like the most likely scenario is third base. It could be second. It could eventually be center once Alec Baum gets called up, but Kingery's going to play every day. And so he's a good value there.
Yeah, and he slumped late in the year. I don't know what the timing was, but apparently he had blurry vision late in the season, and he will wear a contact lens that will fix that. How about that? So Scott Kingery, post-hype.
He feels like someone who's kind of sold out for power, and that wasn't really the profile coming up. So there is room, I think, for him to take a step forward if he improves the contact profile. And he was pretty consistently a 25 to 30 steal guy in the minors.
All right, guys, who do you want to gamble on? Ryan McMahon, Gio Urshela, we know him. Miguel Andujar, Michael Chavis, Luis Arraez, Brian Anderson, Mr. Anderson, Tommy La Stella. Yeah, I'm such a Matrix guy.
You're so 2000 and late. Actually, that was 1999.
You got Austin Riley. You got Kyle Seager, who missed the start of the season on the IL, and then he was really bad early and then really, really good later, but that was kind of a weird season. Have I said any names that pop?
Omitting Urshela, who I think stands out by far. I'm always willing to take a chance on a Rockies hitter if the cost is almost nothing, which it is in Ryan McMahon's case. I mentioned Miguel Andujar's DH only, but like whoever wins that first base job in the Yankees, as long as it isn't a timeshare, whether it's Voit, Andujar, or Ford, they're going to be a must-start fantasy player.
Can I register a complaint? Why is he DH only? Like he was a third baseman in 2018. He was a third baseman in 2019.
No, he played mostly DH in 2019. Did he play?
I don't remember him playing that much. Yeah, he was the opening day third baseman, wasn't he?
He played enough games to I guess he didn't play enough games to
get ineligible. He didn't get 20 anywhere, but it's in that case it goes to the position he played the most, which was DH.
Yeah.
He played only 12 games and he batted 128 and he did not have an extra base hit, Miguel Andujar.
Yeah, I mean he was hurt coming into the season, right? Yeah. He got hurt in spring training, I think.
He was second in Rookie of the Year in 2018. He should have won. Otani robbed him. 297, 328, 527. Can they get? I don't think anybody really bought it, but can they get? He had 47 doubles. Wow, 2018. Can they get playing time for him? That's obviously the big question. Is Michael Chavis going to get playing time? Is Austin Riley going to get playing time?
That one I'm more skeptical of, but Chavis between first and second base, I think there's, he might not be quite an everyday player, but I think he'll play more than either Mitch Moreland or Jose Peraza.
What about Mr. Anderson?
Brian Anderson?
Yeah, he's on pace for 34 home runs in his last 72 games. He became a power hitter.
Yeah, he's fine. If he's your third baseman in standard mixed league, you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
But if it's a deep league an NL-only league, that's the kind of guy that you could probably get at a great discount just because everybody else is filled up there, just because there are so many studs to go around.
And it should be a better Marlins lineup. Relatively speaking, the Miami Hurricanes might have a better lineup than the Marlins did last year, but this should be a better version of what they had than last year.
Number one team in the country, by the way, according to one poll. The Miami Hurricanes. Wow. And who's coming?
Congratulations on your participation trip.
Who's coming to town this week? The number two team, Florida Gators. Be there or be square, everybody. College baseball forever. That's the third base preview. Everybody have a great weekend, all right? Kick back, relax, and listen to our shows and tell your friends. That'd be nice. For Chris, for Scott, I'm Adam. Talk to you Monday with Outfield Part 1.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.